everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, today's stupid hypothetical question is not really a hypothetical question, but a regular question. What kind of music are you into?
Oh, man, I'm into all sorts of stuff. I grew up playing piano, as you know, mm-hmm. So, you know, I've got some attachment to, you know, to doing that. But like a lot of my friends were metalheads. So when we formed the band, it was kind of like classical music meets metal, kind of prog metal type stuff. And so that was the metal end. Like, I became a metal fan in the band, really.
Yeah.
Because they exposed me to a lot of music. But I grew up, man, like, you know, I'm born in 1980, so I was coming to age right when, like, The Chronic was coming out, and, you know, mm-hmm. Dre and Snoop and all the West Coast, Tupac and all the, you know, West Coast hip hop. I was big into grunge, so Soundgarden,
with your long hair.
STP. Yeah, I had my long hair. Soundgarden, STP, Alice in Chains, Tool. Mm-hmm. I'm a really big Tool fan. Those are, but really, man, I'm like, I've got all sorts of playlists, and, you know, I love Prince and David Bowie. And
are you a big, like, mood music kind of guy? Like,
yeah,
do you think the music sets the mood, or like a mood calls for a certain kind of music?
So I tend to lean more toward the second one, right? So, like, mm-hmm. if I'm working out, or, you know, trying to blow off some steam, that's my metal playlist, or my like 90s grunge at the very least. Right. And I've got kind of a, you asked a few pods ago, you asked like a guilty pleasure. And I couldn't think of one, cause I'm bad.
Big Spice Girls guy.
On the spot. No, but like, there's some like, it's so bad. Cause I know it's bad, but like, there's some like new metal that where I'm just like, you know, just like, and like making sure nobody else is around to hear this, so I can crank up freaking Static X or Power Man 5000, or, you know, like, so yeah, that's that. I tend to be like, yeah, more my mood, and or if I'm, you know, feeling more chill, or if I'm working, I'll put on like an ambient music station, mm-hmm. on Pandora or something like that. So how about you, man? What are your musical proclivities?
I'm pretty open generally. I think if I had kind of a go-to, what I'm listening to more often than not, it's probably like folksy music. Like, I'm a really big, I really, really like Jason Isbell. Okay. He's one of my favorite artists, like, ever.
That's awesome.
And he's a relatively new find. So, I've been really into him. I do listen to some country, but not like the stadium country. I don't really like much of that stuff, but like Ryan Bingham, Turnpike Troubadours, like those guys, I like those guys. I grew up, you know, I was born in 1986. So, you know, I kind of had to reach back a little bit to get Tupac and all of that. Like, it was,
sure.
It was just like, I remember, The Chronic was kind of the album that like parents didn't want us playing. So of course we all had it. So like that was definitely the go-to there. Eminem, like I grew up in Yorba Linda. So like it was like we were born with Eminem in our headphones. Linkin Park was a big one back then too. I also listen to classical music while I work. There's this guy, Alexis French, who is just tremendous. If you're just like looking for background music kind of stuff, he's a really good piano player, actually. So I think you'd dig that. I really like music of the world too. So like the Asian, you know, kind of guitar that what is kind of, it's not really a mandolin, but it might be a mandolin, but I like, you know, that stuff. African music, Spanish guitar is some of the most beautiful mm-hmm. stuff you'll ever hear. So I'm pretty eclectic when it comes to that. I'm basically the same way. I'll listen to something like just over the weekend. Jen and I got it into a bit of like a verbal spat. So I just like hopped in the car and went for a drive, and I knew exactly what I wanted to play while I was on this drive. I basically said, I'm going to go on this hour long drive. first 20 minutes are going to be Linkin Park, and I'm just going to like scream and get all this
scream
out.
Scream all emo, yeah.
Right. And then second 20 minutes, I'm going to play, you know, some rap or whatever and focus on that. And then on the way back, because I need to calm down, I'll turn back to Jason Isbell and stuff like that and kind of get myself back in the mode so I don't walk through the door like screaming at everything.
Right.
So yeah, the mood definitely sets the tone for what kind of music should be played. And there's nothing worse than being somewhere that the music just doesn't really match the situation. Mm-hmm. I remember my wife and I we went to this sushi restaurant. It was just like this hole in the wall place in downtown Austin, right when we basically moved here. And the food was tremendous. It was like awesome food, but they were playing like club hip hop.
Yeah.
And like the middle of the day and like with the curse words and everything. So I don't really care about curse words or whatever, but it was just like, so
it just doesn't fit the mood of going out to lunch with your family.
What was going on there? Yeah. So it was a situation that was, you know, music is cool like that. And actually one of the benefits of this quarantine is that like, I've kind of gotten back into music a little bit.
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of music here on my end too. Yeah.
And, you know, cause I got way into podcasts and stuff and, you know, that was basically, but getting back focused on music has actually been quite the relief if I could put it that far.
We should talk more music, man. I'm always down to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Let's, so today's show, we have a few kind of topics that we have to touch on here. The Lakers made some news specifically, with an interesting story of their own. The NBA tried to get everybody back into practice gyms. So we have to talk about that. And then obviously we didn't do a show yesterday. So I will open up the mailbag and we have a few questions on there. Let's start though we'll start with the NBA because I think that's the biggest news. And I don't mean to be a homer or like hold off the Lakers conversation because, you know, it's the Lakers. You guys know I never run from criticizing them on that. I just think it requires a little bit more nuance than we could get to in like the next 3 minutes. But the NBA, so I'm reading from ESPN here. NBA pushes back workout date amid uncertainty. This is from Woj. The NBA has pushed back its original plan to allow players to reenter team facilities for voluntary workouts by a week until May 8th. The league had been planning to reopen facilities beginning on Friday, including the Atlanta Hawks facility in Georgia, which was among the first steps to loosen stay-at-home orders amid the coronavirus pandemic. Before the announcement on Monday, the Hawks had decided to wait until they had a better sense of how the loosening of the stay-at-home measures was impacting the region. Quote, "We are going to wait and see what happens in the state over the couple weeks," Hawks president of basketball operations and general manager Travis Link told ESPN. "If there's a positive response, we'll slowly open up. If it's a negative response, we'll make sure our staff and players remain healthy." And then, you know, it goes on to say that there was quite a bit of pushback from the team saying that it didn't seem like the right time, or that, you know, staff and players and, you know, everybody felt unsafe with coming back into work. I think that's going to happen no matter when they resume. I was just talking to Jen about this. We went for another cruise today and I was just telling her that this is a traumatic event, you know,
sure.
Like people are going to feel uneasy about doing anything for,
yeah, I ain't shaking really nobody's hand for a minute. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I got
right.
No interest
like
in that.
Because out here in Texas on Thursday, they're lifting the stay at home action or
order.
I think it's stupid first and foremost, but anywho, it's being lifted. And, you know, there's a restaurant that, you know, the people that work there at that restaurant were really, really nice to us when Jen and I first moved here. They became like our first essential friends basically out here. And I really hope that, you know, I'm happy that they're going to be able to get back to work and some of the normalcy there, but I don't plan on going in to eat anywhere or do anything. I'm basically growing a mullet, but I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting to go in and get my hair cut. And even if these places are open technically. But yeah, I think, you know, I found it interesting that the NBA, you know, the one thing that you and I have been pretty consistent about is that it seems like the NBA is really trying hard to save this season. But you know, at the end of the day, you do have human beings who might feel at risk here, and it, I don't think it's right to force them back to work.
No, I think that's absolutely the case. And this was always going to happen where and it looks like we've gotten on the other side of the inflection point, right? Like the mm-hmm. maximum number of cases and the maximum number of deaths, but not by much. And the decline is like slight, right? Like it's just a little less every day, really. And some days it's not. So a big part of the reason for that is the social distancing. It is mm-hmm. all of the measures that have been taken to preserve this. And so now as we get back to, you know, work to whatever degree, like it's going to be new, right? It's going to be new. It's not going to be like it was before, however it looks, but also how does that impact? Do we have a second wave that's significant? Is it mm-hmm. like the Chinese Basketball Association tried to open up and then like a week or two into it was like, actually, no, we have to shut down again.
Yeah.
Right. Which is always possible with this sort of thing. I agree certainly on the human element of like people need to feel comfortable in that. And like, it's just, I've maintained a perspective since the beginning of like, listen to the experts. What are the health experts saying on
crazy,
like what we need to be doing? Right? Yeah, imagine that. There's a really cool side on the RO, which is the, basically when, how many people an infected person infects on average. Mm-hmm. And we'll, you know, we're on our way to, you know, to beating the virus when that goes below one. And in most states it has. Are we able to maintain that if everybody's back out in public again?
Right.
And, you know, are we able to stay under one so that it keeps decreasing? That's tricky. And I think that like, yeah, I'm kind of that mindset too, of like, y'all want to go out first? Like, y'all go out first and I'll see what happens in those states. You know what I'm saying? Like before, I mean, not that I have much of a choice in California, we're going to be one of the strictest places from the beginning to the end. Mm-hmm. And I think the results of how, you know, relative to our population, California's done pretty well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's see what happens with all of that. Now, if I'm an NBA player, there's also the, like, if it's only in states that are lifting the stay at home, you've got certain guys perhaps in a gym for like several weeks longer.
Yeah.
And like, there's some competitive imbalance there too, right? Like mm-hmm. how does the NBA account for that? So,
yeah, I know Woj said that, in kind of the rebuttal from teams to the league, there was some kind of concern over the competitive imbalance, right? That comes with some teams being able to go back earlier than others. But it was mostly just that, hey, no, we don't feel safe enough doing this quite yet. And, sure. And, you know, again, kudos to the NBA for saying, all right, fine, we'll push this thing back. We want to make sure that we're all safe here. It's the kind of thing where, you know, we don't need to rush this. Like there's only downside to rushing this return, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, you get to get back to normalcy, but it's not going to be normalcy. They're probably going to play games in empty gyms, right? Mm-hmm. You want to return to the normalcy of being able to go to your 9-to-5. Your 9-to-5 is going to be wildly different. I know out here in Texas, they're only allowing 25% of the normal occupancy in all these buildings that are reopening and stuff. So, like this idea that we're gonna return as a society and then bang, light switch, and we're all gonna be back to normal. That's not how it's gonna work.
And it's gonna be a new normal going forward in a lot of ways for a long time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the NBA and these teams that said, you know, we don't need to rush this, I think that's the right tone to take here, is that it's going to be different no matter how we do this. So we may as well do it right the first time, so we don't have to do it again, just like the CBA did. Right. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we'll keep an eye on this though for you guys. It does look though, like, you know, there's at least progress being made you know,
yeah, there's like rumblings, right? Like it's the, yeah. the ice is starting to thaw, even if we're not all the way there.
Right, right. So, you know, we just gotta, you know, continue to be smart, be safe on this stuff. But it does look like there's some kind of progress here being made, and eventually, I do really believe that we're gonna get a finish to the season. It just seems way too like they're pushing this way too hard for there not to be some kind of a conclusion to this year. I just can't imagine they would do all this and say, all right, we're gonna rush everybody back into the facilities. But we aren't going to play out the season. We're just going to go straight into the offseason. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, let's fingers crossed, man. Like I said, it's just the beginning of this, and it's very, very tenuous. So I'm optimistic-ish, right? Like I'm not all the way there, but I'm like there are little things happening here and there that are little encouraging signs.
Yep. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Lakers apparently applying for some money from the government and then returning it. So we're going to get to that here in a second. Today's episode of the Locked On NBA podcast is brought to you in part by Postmates. From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast, and that's where Postmates comes in. We are all trying to keep each other safe, staying at home, taking care of our own and those around us. And Postmates has been incredible in their role in helping make that happen. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food. That's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery too. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore. Just download the Postmates app on either iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you need delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is offering our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right, so this is now from Kevin Arnovitz of also of ESPN. Quote, the Los Angeles Lakers have returned approximately $4.6 million. Ironically, it's just about what Avery Bradley makes. That they received from a federal government program intended to help small businesses weather the economic burden caused by the coronavirus pandemic, the team said in a statement to ESPN on Monday. The Lakers, one of the NBA's most profitable franchises, applied for relief through the Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program and were among the companies and nonprofits granted loans during the first round of distributions. But after reports that several large or highly capitalized entities were securing aid from the program's initial $349 billion pool, while hundreds of thousands of smaller businesses were shut out, the Lakers said they returned the money. The question that has to be asked here is, do they return the money if this doesn't get dug up?
I guess my question is, did somebody dig it up in the first place, right? Like, was there a threat of somebody reporting it and then they said, no, we're giving it back? Like, it seems to me it's that, like, and this is perhaps a very pro-Laker perspective. So if I'm wrong about this, like, if somebody was going to dig it up, then obviously this isn't true. But, like, we didn't hear about this until they told us about it. Mm-hmm. Right? Like it was the Lakers who kind of reported that they were receiving the money in the first place.
Yeah.
So if there was some sort of external reporting and then there was pressure and they went, oh no, never mind. You know, we don't want it or need it. Like, it's like, all right, come on guys. And I'm skeptical that that's not actually what happened. Right. Like that is like, did they really altruistically go like, oh, this program's like, yes, we'll return this nearly $5 million, like out of the goodness of our heart. Right. Like,
yeah.
And maybe they did. I'm a little skeptical about that, but, I would like to know if there was some imminent threat of it being reported. So then they went, no, we're going to do that. Or if they did exactly what they said they did.
I kind of wonder, like, I want to know who leaked that the Lakers got that money. Like, I want, like, was it another team?
Was that's it, what I'm saying.
Like,
it's like
Tillman Fertitta is like, wait, those motherfuckers got money? They got sure. money?
Sure, but how would Tillman Fertitta know?
Yeah, right? I know. So I've kind of gone back and forth on this all day today, and we're recording at 7:49 my time. So I've been doing a lot of thinking about this. And I think, like you said, there's a pro Lakers reading of this situation, and then there's an anti Lakers reading of the situation, right? The anti Lakers one is a cynical, oh, you, somebody found out that you guys got that money and you now return that money because people found out about it. And then, you know, the pro Lakers version of the story is the one that you laid out. And I don't think either one of them, I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. It doesn't make any sense that the Lakers, a team that, you know, partnered with the Clippers and the Kings to take care of the Staples Center employees, that have, I believe they made another charitable donation to COVID victims separately of that, a team that, you know, for the most part has seemed to care about their community. It doesn't make sense that now all of a sudden they were just kind of like stiff smaller businesses, right? I'm not quite ready to make that leap. However, the Buss family is nowhere near the richest owners in the NBA even, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't have very much outside revenue to draw on right now. And so of owners who would be suffering during this, it would probably be the Busses that are taking as big a hit as anybody financially, right? And now we're talking about billionaires, you know. So I don't have too much empathy for the plight of the American billionaire, but you know, with all that said, if there was a team that I could see looking into something like this, it doesn't exactly shock me that it's the Lakers.
Yeah, and I don't think the Lakers owners, at least, you know, the Buss family are billionaires from a liquid standpoint. Right now, if they decided to sell the Lakers, then yes, of course, they probably all of them would be. Mm-hmm. I don't begrudge somebody for being like, hey, there's $4.6 million out there. Like, I think it's, you know, the way that the loan worked was like what qualified as a small business was under 500 employees. And so you can be a pretty big ass business and be a small business, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Right. And so like the Lakers should not qualify as a small business in the first place.
And noted mom and pop shop, Los Angeles Lakers.
I mean, they're mom and pop shop for the NBA, but like there are a lot of people struggling, with in small business situations across the country that like they need that money. And so I think that the fact that the Lakers could qualify for it in the first place is indicative of a systemic problem in the rollout.
And the fact that they were like the first, like they got this money on the like first round of handouts too. Right, that makes no sense.
So from the Lakers' perspective of like applying for it, like I don't have a problem with that. If there's like, there's obviously losing a lot of revenue. Mm-hmm. That said, like, should they be near first in line? Hell no, right? Like that money should be going to legitimate small businesses, but that's a political thing, right? That we could go off on a whole nother tangent. But they shouldn't have been getting the money in the first place. Again, I don't have a problem with them applying for it. If they're the ones self-reporting saying like, oh, you didn't know we were getting money, but yes, we got this money and we're returning it. Like, we're letting you know that at the same time, like, it's the right thing to do. But yeah, it's kind of indicative of just like, what the hell are we doing with all of this? Like when there's so many people struggling financially.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I talked earlier about the restaurant that is down the street from me. It had been open for 6 months when all this shit hit.
Ouch.
And, have a whole bunch of people who like that is a small business that seriously probably really needed that help.
Absolutely.
And probably needed it faster than the Buss family. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see though. I don't know how much more can be dug into that kind of situation. You know, I'm sure if ESPN is kind of looking into it already, we might get another story about like where it was coming from, who did what or whatever. But as of right now, I mean, we can be cynical and whatever, but at the end of the day, they gave the money back. You know, like it's $4.6 million that went back into this fund that is now going to go to businesses that actually really need it. And hopefully, this is enough to kind of show people how ridiculous the system and the stimulus package itself was. But I doubt we're going to be heading down that path.
Yes.
Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we have about four or five questions here to answer from the mailbag, and we'll send you out of here on a little bit higher note. All right. So the first question here comes from Jason from NYC. Hey, Pete, Anthony, thanks for producing content on the reg. Hope all is well. I was just curious on your take on this. If you were to create another type of NBA content, TV show, movie, etc., what would that entail? Also, what's your go-to snack at Trader Joe's? That's a good question. Trader Joe's is the best. So I was so Trader happy Joe's. When I saw they had Trader Joe's out here. Oh,
yeah. Nice. Yeah. I'm bummed. I've been doing a lot of like Instacart, right? Because trying to go out and be amongst people as little as possible. And they don't have Trader Joe's on there. So that's kind of a bummer. But yeah. But they've got like these mango gummies that are freaking awesome, man. They're so good. So that's my favorite. What's your favorite Trader Joe's snack?
So it's not really a snack, but Trader Joe's like boxed wine is legitimately great. Like they're specific. They're like, they have a cab and they have a, Shiraz, and, the Shiraz is especially really good by boxed wine standards. And you get like four bottles for $8 and you just put it in your fridge and it's a nice go-to this time of year. In terms of like actual snacks, they have, like packs of deli meat. Basically it was like prosciutto, capicola. There's like a Serrano jamon that's really good. That's really good also with that boxed wine. They also make their own Pinot Noir, which is, I think it's about $20 or maybe $15, but it's way better than its price point. So I would also maybe recommend that. And then, you know, in terms of like actual snacks, they also have these ginger mints that are just phenomenal, and they helped get Jen through her pregnancy with all the with her morning sickness. I just bought like 20 boxes of them from Amazon, and it got Jen through her pregnancy. So for those of you who are expecting, give those a shot. Those are really
good. lots of good snacks there. And then the other part of the question was that NBA content specifically or outside? Yeah.
So if you were to create another type of NBA content, even though you created just about every type of NBA content there we could. What would you do next, I guess?
Ooh. I would love to go inside the gym more often, right? Like kind of there's a world that fans are not particularly privy to that they only see on Instagram, right? Like 20 seconds of in the summer of a guy like working on his jump shot. Right. Something like that, right? And the work that gets done in the gym with like for individual players with trainers and whatnot, it's a really interesting world that I don't think fans are particularly exposed to. So I would want to do something where I'm like, you know, it's interviewing a trainer and an NBA, you know, person, and then they're working with the player, and then they're kind of like walking through like, this is what we're working on, and this is why we're working on it, and this is the in-game application of it. And there's just like, there's a whole, like I said, basketball world and the things that happen outside of games that's really cool that the average fan is not exposed to. And so I'd want to kind of shine a little more light onto that. How about you?
Well, I've always, you and I were thinking about doing this before I moved. But I really want to basically do like, you know, where we have we would be facing away from the camera, right? The camera would be basically behind us. There'd be a big screen there where we're watching whatever kind of content, whether it's a game. You know, my go-to would have been the Lakers Kings game back when they, you know, I think it was like in the '80s and they just smoked Sacramento there. But basically just. Like I would like to find a way to watch a game with more people. And actually when we come back from this hiatus, whenever that is, I do have a couple kind of, you know, potential ideas to be able to do that with you guys but yeah, we need to improve the the experience of watching a game. Like, I think it really needs to be kind of rethought in a lot of ways. And I think one of the ways is, and I'm really interested to see what this Microsoft deal is, you know, for what they're able to do there as Jen decides to run the dish. I don't know what the hell that was in the background, but yeah, Microsoft, I think, is going to offer quite a bit of stuff. You know, I think Twitch is also getting involved here to be able to give people just give people options that are not Jeff Van Gundy whining for 3 hours on my TV screen.
Yeah. Wholeheartedly agree.
Let's go to the next one here. Captain Matt writes, I have two questions for Pete and you. Do you guys think Phil Jackson will get a statue at Staples Center? Also, if Phil did get a statue during the LeBron Lakers era, how do you think LeBron would react about that? Oh, because of the comment.
Didn't we answer this?
Did we?
I think so.
Oh.
I think last week we answered this. Yeah.
All right, so we will go. Kay Izzle writes, Anthony knows that we know what he looks like. Who are you trying to fool? You were never an athlete guy. Also read that one.
Yeah, also read that. You like reading the self-abuse or the abuse twice, yeah. Yes.
Let's see. All right, so Maxim McNasty Hands Never Ashy wrote, just finished the Russ Bankston episode, and I have to say that interviewing may be Anthony Irwin's calling. As a longtime listener, I appreciate Anthony's frustrating hot takes because I know where they come from. They come from a great place, but this episode here was incredible. It was really good. Russ was really fun.
Nice.
And gave really good insight. Keep up the good. Oh, I guess there was no question there. So let's go to the last one here. Hey,
balances
guys.
Out the abuse, right? The compliment restores balance.
I appreciate that. I like that stuff. Hey guys, I have heard Pete talk often about the Lakers needing a shooter who can shoot off screens. Pete, could you explain how that would open up LeBron and AD?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So think about the Warriors, and the Warriors are kind of the, like, it's this idea turned up to like 10 out of 10. So you're not going to get like Steph, right, or Clay. But mm-hmm. It's the same idea where as a shooter comes off of an off-ball screen, it's difficult to defend. Now, you can switch it. And if you end up switching that, well, what if it's AD setting the screen, mm-hmm. right? So like the shooter who can come off of screens is kind of the missing link that can make the LeBron-AD combo even more effective, where... and we've got a couple of guys. So like, you know, if those two out there with KCP or even with Danny Green, who's not, you know, great coming off of pin downs, but like you sort of see this with them. But it, for a guy who could really come off of screens, say it's AD setting the screen. So can you switch it? No, right? Because then you've got whoever was supposed to be guarding the shooter now
behind
defending
AD.
Anthony Davis, right? Mm-hmm. And when you switch, switches are vulnerable to slips. So... And slip screens, meaning like you pretend you set the screen, but then cut right to the basket. And if you do, if you use a reverse pivot, you seal the guy behind you. So not only is that smaller guy who's supposed to be defending the shooter, defending AD, he's behind him, like you said, right? Yeah. With, when he dives to the basket on a slip or even a roll, if AD does that right. And now there are ways that they can, if they don't switch it, like you want to switch in a certain way so you're not caught, but like even best case scenario is like, yeah, you've got a small guy defending AD in the post, and that's had mixed results, right? But that's still an advantage, right? If the shooter comes off of it, if you really, so if you don't switch, if you lock and trail, which is usually how you defend shooters, so say I'm defending Kyle Korver, I'm not worried about Kyle Korver driving to the basket and getting all the way to the rim, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I want to make him do. So I'm going to lock and trail, which means that I'm going to get on his hip. So say he's on the right side of the court. Say you're standing at half court and he's in the right corner. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get on his right hip, and that helps me, and then get skinny. We call it get skinny as you get around the screen and dip your front shoulder so you're harder to hit with the screen.
And maybe grab his jersey a little bit.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. All the little hand fighting down, totally, absolutely. And so, yeah, you got all that going on, and you know, you're trying to not let him get separation. So if they do that, again, that's there are ways for AD to take advantage of that. It's also if a good screen set, it's hard to do. if they lock and trail, then that gives you a curl opportunity with AD rolling to the basket. So it's kind of like a side pick and roll. And side pick and rolls, you either have to ice or switch to be able to prevent it from like the help having to come from a long way away. I know this is getting convoluted. I'm sorry. But like a side pick and roll like that is really advantageous where they don't ice it and you're driving middle. It's the reason that defenses ice ball screens. Same concept here. You just don't have the ball to start with. So that's a great roll opportunity for AD right there. The guy gets hit by the screen, or if they try to shoot the gap, which is the other way of defending it, right? Like say Korver is trying to go from the corner to the wing. And so I'm going to go like underneath and try to beat him to the wing. Now he can break off his screen and flare back to the corner. And now I'm screwed, right? And LeBron is so big and he throws those great jump passes. So he can get velocity on passes over the top that are skip passes, right? Where skip passes, not just being cross court passes, but it's skip one position. So if LeBron's up top on a wide pin down screen and you got a shooter coming around and the defender tries to shoot the gap, he's going to flare back to the corner. LeBron's going to plant one foot in the ground, jump in the air and throw one of those two-handed passes over the top because he's going to be able to get high enough to where nobody's going to deflect that. And that means it's an open corner three at that point. So in very simple English, there's a problem with every way that you could guard that because of the talents of LeBron and AD that like, however, if you've got a guy like, someone asked on the LFR pod a couple weeks ago, like who would be like an ideal third star with those two. And I said, if he's healthy, like Klay Thompson would be amazing because that trio, not only are they great individually, but they amplify each other. And we've seen how LeBron and AD amplify each other this season. The shooter, like LeBron and AD have so much gravity on the basket. The shooter provides that outside gravity, right? Of like, so it's, you've got to make a choice if you're the defense and none of them are really good. So it just like, it's like the missing piece, the one thing that like, that if you could get that, it would be unstoppable in a lot of ways. So yeah, an off-screen shooter, I would love to have a guy where defenses have to go, oh crap, like we've got to step up on it. And then, sorry, one last thing. If the big steps up, which happens a lot on those, like just to buy the guy time, because he's getting screened, right? He needs a little bit of time to be able to recover. If the big steps up, again, that's a roll in for AD to the basket with nobody behind him. And he's going to wreak havoc doing that. So they're just like, there's so many ways to make it work. But right now, defenses have some options that, like, there's not that threat on the perimeter in the first place.
It would also help Rondo because it would give him a purpose, right? So, like, if Rondo was in charge, like, had the ball there, because, like, the one thing that drives us kind of insane with Rondo is that he doesn't really play by feel. He wants to hold the ball and you know, play quarterback back there and call the play and then make sure all the options of the plays are gone through. If you have somebody like, this is why it worked really well with Ray Allen. Like if you have somebody like Ray Allen to run around all those screens and stuff, that gives Rondo a purpose to be able to make sure that pass is a pinpoint kind of pass. That like, because the Lakers don't really have that, those second units have really kind of struggled because they're asking Rondo to play more by feel, and that's not something he's ever really wanted to do. So, yeah, I would be great if Klay was made available. And hell, like there's all that talk about Giannis, you know, heading to the Bay, and if Klay is sacrificed in order to make that happen, then maybe the Lakers can walk away with Klay, and that'd be great if he's healthy. I think, although he's kind of a freak in how quickly he is healed over his career. So I think he should be all right, and I'm hoping he's still all right, just because I really like Klay Thompson, the player.
Yeah, absolutely. Great competitor along with everything. Yeah,
he's like a goober.
He's like the most competitive stoner of all time. It's freaking great. I like love that guy.
Yeah, he like smokes a certain kind of like a certain strand that also makes him insanely competitive. It's incredible. He's really good. That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys a ton for your questions. Reminder, if you guys have questions, send them in the form of a 5-star review and we will answer those as soon as we possibly can. We again are going to keep our eye on both the stories regarding the Lakers and their tax money or their government money, and then the NBA trying to come back, which is far and away the bigger story there. So we'll keep an eye there as well for you. And we'll be back tomorrow to talk. We'll probably get into our bracket, I would imagine. We'll go team versus team here in tomorrow's show. So look forward to that. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Stay safe out there. We'll talk to you tomorrow.